Welcome to the Org Design Podcast. Today's episode is a little bit different. It's a special episode. We are focusing on a specific industry use case. And to help us with that conversation today, James Davis from the TSP Advisory has joined us. James, tell us about the industry you've worked in, the industry you now advise for, and what problem do they solve?
For having me, Amy. So I'm focused in on the technology services industry. So that's the traditional managed services providers, the systems integrators, the value-added resellers, and the modern transformation into a technology solutions partner. And so this is all about servicing end clients through implementing and managing different types of technology. And challenges that are really facing this industry at the moment is that transformation from our traditional business models into that modern way of needing to operate and changing that business model and delivering different things to our clients to meet their needs. And part of the industry is looking at exit. So there's consolidation that's going on. So there's a lot of different things that are changing the dynamics of org design that are happening. It's a really exciting time and should be a fun podcast.
So how did the model historically work? So if you could give me a pretend example of what a client might look like for you and then who they tend to serve.
And I know I'm talking about three traditional models here, so I'll give a really quick summary of each one. So a MSP, they were born from fixing broken things. They were the guys that we've got some desktops, we've got a network environment. Something's broken, we need someone to come in and fix it. So they've been sort of that traditional help desk support model.
For other companies.
Yeah, for
that have an office, they have to provide tools for their teams.
Correct. So everyone else that may listen to this, they probably have some form of that sort of support. The SI, the systems integrator, they've traditionally been a project-led engagement, so that more that professional services, consulting, and project delivery, and they function that way. So a bit more like a construction company than an ongoing sort of service.
So would that be like we're bringing in a new system and it needs a partner to make it happen?
Yeah, perfect.
Such a big project.
Perfect example. We might be doing a SAP implementation or a new accounting package or specialized network in our warehouses or something like that. And then the fun is value-added reseller, the VAR. And their traditional model has been selling products. So they're more of a sales-led organization. They've traditionally sold to mid-market and enterprise clients their hardware. They procure the monitors and the desktops and their servers and all of that through that value-added reseller. So they're very distinct sort of legacies that they're coming from. And the evolution that's happening is into that technology solutions partner. While there's still similarities where there's a technology brokerage, which is sort of that modern VAR, the SI is becoming much more of a specialist that requires a channel model that works with partners rather than so much direct like the past. That MSP is either needing to grow and scale and be a scale provider, or they're becoming more boutique and they're becoming more of a advisory firm first that leverages technology to solve their end clients' problems. And so they vary, while they're similar, they're becoming very different. So that's where we start getting those org design challenges around those traditional models and how they're structured and how these new models, while similar, the roles and responsibilities are changing, the structure of the teams are changing, the ratios of how to actually scale and grow are changing as well to maintain margins and profitability. And so that's where org design really starts to come into this conversation.
So I can imagine that when you're an advisor to these companies in this industry, I can imagine when they approach you, they haven't rocked up and said, "Hey, James, got an org design problem." I'd love to understand what are the problems that they've approached you with. You've covered that a little bit, but maybe you could give some more examples. But then I'd love to know how you've come along and eventually been working on that project and thought, there's definitely some org design elements that are showing up here.
So traditionally, when I often talk about this, that I've been talking a lot about that transformation, and a lot of people aren't really articulating it. But traditionally, I've had the other side of the optimization of, we've got this, we've reached a certain size, and now we need to understand what's the next sort of curve jump. How do we go from a 20-person organization into a 30-person organization? What does that look like? So when it's sort of been on that linear journey, the partners that I have worked with realize there's growing pains that they need to deal with, and they often know that is the people structure side, just sort of naturally. They might not be able to articulate why, and it's usually they will articulate other symptoms that's going on. You know, maybe all of a sudden they've got more leaders, so now the communication's breaking down, or they've actually got departments now, so that cross-functionality isn't happening, the silos are being built. But in this sort of transformation side, it's more that they don't necessarily have a vision and a strategy yet of what the future is that they can articulate. And so that's usually where I start with that engagement in the TSP advisory, is to talk to them about what are they sensing and feeling, what do they want to do in that sort of next decade horizon. Let's articulate that. And then one of the natural things to come out of it is I will say, well, actually, we need to sort of map this organization out about what it looks like. So that includes roles and responsibilities, obviously, the teams, departments that are sort of needed, and then what the structures would look like in those. But then also the nomenclature of those different teams, to say, treat them differently to how, say, a traditional team of, say, marketing has a connotation compared to when you talk about a go-to-market team. They're very different. People have very different what you're talking about, what that means, what the purpose is. And it often starts from that sort of high level to get the juices flowing.
Yeah, so what does that, at a high level structure, thinking through those departments, let's get into specifics. What are some that show up in the TSP industry,
so
typically? Or that you're seeing a shift to? Are we in a blended model at the moment?
Yeah, we're definitely in that transition phase. So if I'll start sort of the traditional first of how we've typically broken down technology services businesses. In the SIs and MSPs, they've been very service focused. So the core of their business has always been focused on the service delivery. So in a traditional MSP, you're typically splitting them up by what would be called a help desk, service desk, team department. There would be a shared services area, and then you'd have your professional services. And then wrapped around that, depending on size, you'd have different variations of your finance and procurement, and then your sales teams. We don't traditionally see HR departments in technology services businesses. You don't really see...
Would they outsource, or it'd be an accountability for one member of the company?
Yeah, often it's not even outsourced. I'd almost say it's been traditionally ignored as a function. It's always been sort of that you only get to that point when you're going to Fair Work down here in Australia kind of mentality. It's been quite a loose thing. So it's been probably, like you said, attributed to someone to do as part of their role, but it's not really been focused.
But someone's putting together contracts, like employment contracts. Yeah, that's someone doing that, but not much else.
Correct. Gotcha. That's the best way to frame it up. And so then you've got like the sales team, and then that's typically been, it's not really necessarily a sales team. It's usually an account management team that's focused on their existing businesses. And in an SI, fairly similar. They don't typically have a proper help desk, service desk. So they just have more resources in the professional services, and they typically have a PMO, the project management office. And then again, they've got the sort of business services wrapped around it, like the finance and procurement side. Then they've traditionally got a more sales driven than account management driven, because they're having to go chase projects a lot more. So they've often got a lot more business development managers. And then the VAR is very different. They're sales-led organisations, so they've typically got BDMs, often called account executives, however they want to frame it, but basically hunters going after transaction after transaction. And then they'll have quite a large procurement team. Then the sort of services team is quite small when they have them. They're often leveraging partners or something else and only delivering some core stuff. Again, they don't typically have a help desk, and their finance department sort of smaller than the procurement, because the procurement's doing most of what would typically be taken up by other departments. So that's our sort of traditional legacy.
They're all very functional.
Yeah.
People doing the same function sit together.
Yeah.
In a team.
Yeah. And it just, again, it depends on scale, on how mixed those functions become. Like in a smaller organization, you might have someone that's doing finance, procurement, the HR, sales support kind of role functions and responsibilities, one wearing one hat. And then the sales team might be smaller, and they might be doing BDM, account management, sales support, all in one role. And the typical sort of small to medium sized business, but it's very driven by their core revenue generating mechanism. So again, the MSP is driven by the support and ongoing management. Their size driven by the projects, and the VAR is driven by the sales and procurement side. So that really dictates the amount of people that are in those departments and functions, and then how their whole culture works, just from that sort of mentality of how they're built.
Mm-hmm. And would drive which, as they grew, as you said, which one got resources first.
Yeah.
And those positions became much clear cut with one role rather than carrying multiple roles, multiple hats.
Yeah, correct. With volume comes speciality. So as we talk about that transformation into the technology solutions partner, what I'm doing, because it's sort of new ground. It's not necessarily brand new ground, because we've done this in the different business models before. Other industries have advisory practices. So I'm usually helping them start from the high level of understanding that, what is that identity of the business? What's our culture? What's our what are our core drivers, and then how we split it out. So I typically split it out into a few categories at a high level. It's the business services, which is that internal finance, HR, procurement type side that we're talking about before, but we're giving it a overarching theme, because in these themes, what we're trying to do is actually align leadership to those themes, because one of the biggest challenges in our industry is we don't have the leadership talent with enough experience. There's a lot of good people, but they're often quite young. We've got this generational gap where a lot of the founders of the traditional businesses are in their 50s plus, and then a lot of their leaders are late 20s to mid 30s. There's not many people in the late 30s and 40s and 50s that are actually still in this sort of SMB technology services industry left. Focus and theming is important, because each one of these areas that I go through in a minute all have different drivers, all have different metrics, all have different people and skills, etc., that need to be framed up a certain way, because a lot of our businesses don't have the operational maturity. The industry's only been around 30, 40 years at most. And so, but a lot of these businesses in general have only been running in max 15, 20 years. So it's not like it's not like a accounting field where they've been established for years. They've got practices that have been well defined for 150, this type of thing, and it's legislated. We're not a professionalized industry. So everything we're sort of making up on the fly.
You did mention the values, was it? The values that you use to help define the structure. Is that typically the same for each client, or do you find each client you're working with has a slightly different set? And could you give us an example?
Yeah, the identity is a bit different. So you can use those sort of business models that I talked around before. Technology broker as opposed to a scaled partner. are going to have very different focuses. While there's some similarities, they're both very sales driven. The technology broker has a lot less need on a service department. They're not really servicing a whole lot compared to a scaled where their core revenue is on that volume of scale of delivering services. And so understanding that long-term strategic objective and being able to frame that into that vision and that identity then starts helping them know that core of their business, you know, like what is the core drivers and what are we really focused on making sure is our core, and then wrapping around the support in the different ways. And then obviously size as an attribute plays a big part into determining what's right and how to do this. Regions, growth rates, all of that kind of attributes then come into that sort of long-term planning to dictate what we're doing differently for that unique business. There's a lot of similarities by types, but there is a lot of nuance when you start getting into it, especially when you are working with a business that's already established and has people, because you've already got resources there in place. It's very different than when you just do this in theory or for a startup to go what's next. You're playing with what capabilities do we already have, what are we trying to move to, and what are the phases in between that are going to get us there? Because it's never, especially in SMB, it's never a light switch. You can't just make 50% of your people redundant, hire 50% back in and reshape your business overnight. You can't make such big and dramatic moves in an SMB like you would in that corporate and enterprise sort of manner. So it's a very nuanced field when you start getting into the nitty-gritty. But it also, just because I typically work with founders of these businesses, it really helps them go through the story of people, the identity, where we're heading, and why are we making these decisions? And then it's very easy for them to then drive it, and it gets sort of inbuilt to the culture. And as part of that transformation journey, that starts to become a story.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like across all TSPs, there's elements that are repeatable. You've got roles that show up across the board. You've maybe got some smaller team sizes that show up across the board. But for an individual organization, the way you use those pieces to build up the whole company is going to show up differently based on their story, where they're at, where they're headed.
Yes. 100%. And that's where that sort of, going back to those areas that I'll describe in a minute, that's sort of the building blocks to explain the structure and functions of a TSP. A lot of SMBs don't actually stop to think about what their structure of their business is. It is what it is, and they just keep growing. And at some point, like I said, they hit at that point where, oh, there's growing pains. Maybe we need to look at something different. And some people just get it naturally right. Some people fumble along. Some people guess and get it wrong. Some people try and leave it as is as long as possible and hang on to what's happened in the past. And so that reframe with these areas, so like business services that I was talking about, I call it client services, but ultimately it's the sales and marketing side. It's our service delivery management. It's our account management, BDMs, marketing team, SDRs, those kinds of roles that are finding new logos, generating demand, servicing the accounts, making sure retention, increasing sales, all of that kind of thing. The reason why I call it client services is typically in this industry, sales is a dirty word because all the founders are technical people. So they don't really want sales teams. They want people that are just there to help the clients. And so client services. And then you start getting into the delivery side. And so I break it down into a couple. There's an advisory practice, which is all about consulting, ongoing advice to the clients, assessments, governance, compliance type of actions. There's our support services, which is that more traditional service desk. But the reason why I don't call it service desk anymore is our support services need to start changing. We need to start enabling people. We've been very reactive in the past. Technology's changing. So we're actually having to adapt what we're doing for clients because of their needs. And so it's gonna change quite significantly over the next few years. We've got our project services, which are pretty obvious, PMO, professional services, implementations, etc. And then we've got our centralized services, which is our maintenance team. It's automation. It's the team that we can utilize to leverage scale and reduce and increase our margins by using technology very well to streamline practices and make sure we're maintaining standards in our client environment and scale. And then the final one is application services. So that's starting to get into the DevOps, the application development, the ERP, CRM type of implementations. And when you look at those different services arms, they all generate money differently. So they're generating their revenue in a different way. Their cost bases are different. And the levers and key metrics that they're tracking are all very different. So traditionally, even though we might have these sort of separate departments, we often have meshed them and had too much overlap and not accounted for these different types of ways. And so by just framing it up that way at a high level, we're then able to start having a conversation around, do we do this? Don't we do it? How are we doing it at this point? What type of resources and skills do we need? Here's the metrics and the ratios that we use in these particular areas. And here's how you manage profitability, most importantly.
Yeah. So you get to actually align your teams to not only the business model, but the operating model of that industry and really set some clear goals around it.
Yeah. It's very powerful when we start from the top down. I've found most of the time, and I go back to talking how you asked me that question around how do these issues usually come up. When we're trying to solve symptoms of a problem and then identify it's that growth pain and we need to restructure, it's usually Band-Aid. It's usually done in that sort of reactive way of, we've grown to this certain size, let's just change like this now, problem solved, moved on. Where this sort of top-down approach, it's tied with more purpose to the business and has that sort of naming convention and the detail behind it to allow the teams to get behind it and then actually be able to plan the implementation of the change, but also, most importantly, implement the ongoing management and accountability rhythms based on industry best practices from that point. And that's where business can really thrive at that point, because it's not just that knee-jerk change of it doesn't feel quite right. And we often, because we're an established business, well, we're splitting these two teams. This person's already a leader of one and this person needs a fancy title, so we'll just do it that way. This often forces people to actually plan this out without having names on a page in the first place. And that starts to open up a lot healthier conversations and then enables that transformation to happen better and take people on the journey.
Yeah. So there's the Band-Aid approach would be structural problem, stick some Band-Aids on. Probably there's still that tie to the human that's actually in the seat. There's going to be history there and relationship. But you're saying stop, step back, are the leadership team clear on who they are and where they're heading? And only then let's look at the structure in the bigger picture before you dive down into the details. Do you find that leaders are really open to stepping back and having that conversation about the bigger picture? And do they have a spectrum of how much they've thought about it versus not thought about it?
I'll start with that one. I think most people haven't thought about it. They probably just, again, they just sense something's wrong. Like that's, and until someone comes in and helps them articulate it and then gives them that sort of framework to work against, then all of a sudden the light bulbs start going off and go, oh, well, that's why we're having this problem. Oh, that this would open up a different avenue of how to do something. And then they can have those conversations. Now, that's it's really the, I'd say that that sort of founder executive level will just get this sort of stuff straight away and can detach themselves from it. So when you start getting into the next layer of leadership, and especially when we've got a lot of young people, they go straight to, where am I on this org chart? Is that chart? They're very worried about themselves. And I wouldn't say, especially in this space, it's very ever rare maliciousness or like true ego, but it's the lack of experience and maturity to step back and go, yeah, if things do need to change, let's work out what it looks like. Then I'll find where I, based on the structure of going, well, actually, I'd be a best fit and this is where my strengths would be. That's often my biggest challenge, is with that layer of leadership, to actually get them to just stop worrying about themselves, worry about the structure, the roles and responsibilities. Then we'll find the right seat. And often when we do that, that's where they end up actually with a lot more clarity, a lot more focus, a lot better results, because they're not having to wear 20 different hats and it's vague and they don't know what they're doing. But they need to go along with that journey. And most do when I do this kind of work. But some don't. Some really struggle with the lack of concreteness of starting from them, and then where else do other people fit around them?
Yeah. So to help build that structure, build up those roles and responsibilities, I understand that different size organizations are going to have different ratios, but have you found a typical structure and a typical ratio of those different departments for TSP?
Yeah, what I'll do, I'll start from the financial perspective. So there's some well-trodden numbers of how a technology business should be operating for best practice finance. At a really high level, we should be running at about 50% gross profit after wages. So after our service delivery costs, we're making 50% of the revenue. There's some nuance in this, but I'll keep it very generic. And then there's typically, after that, we're expecting to spend 32% or less on total operating expenses as a percentage of revenue. So basically that means our SG&A costs. And so immediately you can start to see ratios. We know, if we're just to keep this really simple, if we're only delivering service-based revenue, well, 50% of our cost is going to be split between the tools that we use to do it and our labor. So it's typically going to be something like 70% labor, 30% tool costs. So all of a sudden we know of that, if we're doing $1 million worth of revenue, we've got 500 grand to spend to deliver that. And of that 500 grand, we've got 70% of that cost is against wages. So all of a sudden we already know the amount of people that we can have in that department. And it typically ends up being, when we break it down, that the ratio is 2.5 to 3 times a person's salary is the amount of revenue that they generate. So when you look at $1 million revenue, if we've got an average tech that costs $100,000, that means they're going to generate anywhere between $250,000 and $300,000. So for my brain, as I'm working this out, let's just say $250,000. That means we can have 4 techs delivering that revenue. And that helps us scale that side. There's more nuance to break it down on what sort of delivery, but keep it simple. With the breakdown on the SG&A, our sales general administration costs, there's a split. So we typically expect 21% of our revenue to go towards our G&A, so our general administrative costs. That's our occupancy expenses, insurance, those kinds of business costs, plus our executive and administrative people. So that's all our HR, our finance, procurement people are in that bucket on top of our executive. So we already, again, have a ratio there to right-size the amount of people that we have against non-billable. And that leaves over 11% for sales and marketing. And that's typically split 7% sales, 4% marketing. So again, just from that high level, those sort of areas that I was talking about should automatically then have a have an easy starting point around a budget for labor costs, and that scales up and down. It's a industry-wide global best practice to then generate the levels of profitability that we need.
Yeah, amazing. I know I'm a really visual learner, so I'll make sure we include in the show notes that drawn out on a piece of paper for people to have a look at. So that's the sort of high-level budget distribution. Is there then a clear set of the types of positions that typically do make up then that team? Is there a fairly standard set of roles and responsibilities that then can be applied?
Yeah, there is. There's a core to each of these business models. So if I'll stick on the MSP support-focused business for a second. The majority of our revenues coming from the support services, so our recurring managed services. So that will, the majority of labor will then go into the service desk and the traditional shared services. That's typically been 5 techs in support, 1 tech in the shared services. We're often, there's a measurement that we use in the industry called endpoints per tech. And so typically we're aiming for a minimum of 300 endpoints per tech for us to be servicing the right amount. There's a lot of nuance around that, but at a high level, that's sort of a general health indicator. And so those two roles right there, you'll typically have levels of tech in the service desk. You'll have service coordinator, service manager, or team leader, depending on type of business you've got. And then you'll have that sort of shared services engineer, NOC engineer, different sort of names, same sort of principles. And then you might have a project engineer or a project manager, project coordinator, again, depending on the site. Then you'll often have your account manager is on the sales side. You'll have an owner. And then you might have an operations coordinator type person. And that's sort of the typical 10-person MSP. Mm-hmm. As you scale up, that's when you start adding more roles in different places and depending on where the most revenue is. And that dictates that on the service side of those roles expanding. On the sales side, it really depends on the strategy of what the business is. Typically in this industry, the majority are owner-led sales, so they don't typically need a BDM until they're nearly $10 million revenue at that point, unless they're going after a hard and fast organic growth. Most are still just account managers, but they might add like a sales support officer or something like that to support that team and generate the quotes and things like that. So those are the core. And then comes all the nuances and all the differences. But most of them are templated. Like when I'm working with someone, I've got a whole bunch of templates for those roles. And then we just refine based on the nuance in those particular clients. But there's not really industry standard. Like even if we go back to the levels of techs in a service desk, you can pretty much go to 10 different MSPs and they'll have different standards, different expectations of what these are. But those are being refined through just natural maturity. Some more modern technology solution partners are leveraging the SOFIA standard, that's like a global framework for skills. So that sort of stuff is coming, and the professionalism and the standardization in the industry, which will make this easier.
Well, thanks so much, James. Is there any other thoughts that have popped in before, that you want to make sure we share before we wrap up?
I think more people just need to think about this a bit more and understand their identity of their business and start to use the financial data and the ratios that I was talking about to actually make decisions. Far too many in the industry.
So powerful.
It is. It frames everything up much better to be data-driven. And so many people in the industry are either running too lean with slim margins, or they're overstaffed because they're not efficient. But they don't have a reference. They're making very emotional decisions. And when the industry is running at 6% EBITDA as an average, and at any one time 25% of the industry is running at break even or losing money, we're doing something wrong as an industry. And a lot of it comes down to the way that we've got our people structured and how they're operating. So this whole conversation around most of us aren't thinking about org design. It's actually one of the critical skeletons and the backbone of the business that creates the structure that everything else hangs off. And especially when you start wrapping around the roles and responsibilities, accountabilities and metrics, that's when the culture and everything else can really flourish.
Yeah. Sort of where the leadership comes to life. One of our other guests, Lisa, talks about the clarity break. So James, it sounds like you're encouraging all your TSP leaders to take that clarity break, step back, ask these questions. We'll provide the tools. We'd love to see everyone taking that clarity break and really thinking about their org design in the TSP industry.
It's a perfect time to do it. No better time than today.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.